There is a gate, perhaps more than one, in the encircling wall, and I believe there is a stream running through it. It comes out of the mountains and flows on across the Gap of Rohan. It doesn't seem the sort of place for Ents to tackle. But I have an odd feeling about these Ents. Somehow I don't think they're quite as safe and, well, funny as they seem. They seem slow, queer, and patient, almost sad, and yet I believe they could be roused. If that happened, I'd rather not be on the other side. Yes, said Pippin, I know what you mean. There might be all the difference between an old cow sitting and thoughtfully chewing and a bull charging, and the change might come suddenly. I wonder if Treebeard will rouse them. I'm sure he means to try. But they don't like being roused. Treebeard got roused himself last night, and then bottled it up again. The hobbits turned back. The voices of the Ents were still rising and falling in their conclave. The sun had now risen high enough to look over the high hedges. It gleamed on the tops of the birches and lit the northward side of the dingle with a cool yellow light. There they saw a little glittering fountain. They walked along the rim of the great bowl at the feet of the evergreens. It was pleasant to feel cool grass about their toes again, and not to be in a hurry. And then they climbed down to the gushing water. They drank a little, a clean, cold, sharp draught, and sat down on a mossy stone, watching the patches of sun on the grass and the shadows of the sailing clouds passing over the floor of the dingle. The murmur of the Ents went on. It seemed a very strange and remote place, outside their world, and far from everything that had ever happened to them. A great longing came over them for the faces and voices of their companions, especially for Frodo and Sam and for Strider. At last there came a pause in the Ent voices, and looking up they saw Treebeard coming towards them with another Ent at his side.
Hum, here I am again, said Treebeard. Are you getting weary or feeling impatient, Well, I'm afraid that you must not get impatient yet. We've finished the first stage now, but I've still got to explain things again to those that live a long way off, far from Isengard, and those that I could not get round to before the moot, and after that we shall have to decide what to do. However, deciding what to do does not take Ents so long as going over all the facts and events that they have to make up their minds about. Still, it's no use denying we shall be here a long time yet, a couple of days, very likely. So I brought you a companion. He has an Ent house nearby. Bregolad is his elvish name. He says he has already made up his mind and does not need to remain at the moot. He is the nearest thing about us to a hasty Ent. You are to get on together. Goodbye.
Treebeard turned and left them. Bregolad stood for some time surveying the hobbits solemnly, and they looked at him, wondering when he would show any signs of hastiness. He was tall, and seemed to be one of the younger Ents. He had smooth, shining skin on his arms and legs. His lips were ruddy, and his hair was grey-green. He could bend and sway like a slender tree in the wind. At last he spoke, and his voice, though resonant, was higher and clearer than Treebeard's.
My friends, let us go for a walk, he said. I am Bregolad. That is Quickbeam in your language, but it is only a nickname, of course. They have called me that ever since I said yes to an elder Ent before he had finished his question. Also, I drink quickly and go out while some are still wetting their beards. Come with me.
He reached down two shapely arms and gave a long-fingered hand to each of the hobbits. All that day they walked about in the woods with him, singing and laughing, for Quickbeam often laughed. He laughed if the sun came out from behind a cloud. He laughed if they came upon a stream or spring. Then he stooped and splashed his feet and head with water. He laughed sometimes at some sound or whisper in the trees. Whenever he saw a rowan tree, he halted a while with his arms stretched out and sang and swayed as he sang. At nightfall he brought them to his Ent house. Nothing more than a mossy stone set upon turves under a green bank. Rowan trees grew in a circle about it, and there was water, as in all Enthouses, a spring bubbling out from the bank. They talked for a while as darkness fell on the forest. Not far away the voices of the Entmoot could be heard still going on, but now they seemed deeper and less leisurely, and every now and again one great voice would rise in a high and quickening music, while all the others died away. But beside them Bregolad spoke gently in their own tongue, almost whispering, and they learned that he belonged to Skinbark's people, and the country where they had lived had been ravaged. That seemed to the hobbits quite enough to explain his hastiness, at least in the matter of orcs.
"There were rowan trees in my home," said Bregolad, softly and sadly. "Rowan trees that took root when I was an Enting, many, many years ago in the quiet of the world. The oldest were planted by the Ents to try and please the Entwives, but they looked at them and smiled and said that they knew where whiter blossom and richer fruit were growing. Yet there are no trees of all that race, the people of the Rose, that are so beautiful to me. And these trees grew and grew, till the shadow of each was like a green hall, and their red berries in the autumn were a burden, and a beauty and a wonder. Birds used to flock there. I like birds, even when they chatter, and the rowan has enough and to spare. But the birds became unfriendly and greedy, and tore at the trees, and threw the fruit down, and did not eat it. Then orcs came with axes and cut down my trees. I came and called them by their long names, but they did not quiver, they did not hear or answer, they lay dead. Oh, Orophane, Lassamista, Carnemirie, O rowan fair, upon your hair how white the blossom lay. O rowan mine, I saw you shine upon a summer's day, your rind so bright, your leaves so light, your voice so cool and soft. Upon your head how golden red the crown you bore aloft. O rowan dead, upon your head your hair is dry and grey, your crown is spilled, your voice is still for ever and a day. O Orophane, Lassamista, Carnemirie. The hobbits fell asleep to the sound of the soft singing of Bregolad, that seemed to lament in many tongues the fall of trees that he had loved. The next day they spent also in his company, but they did not go far from his house. Most of the time they sat silent under the shelter of the bank, for the wind was colder, and the clouds were closer and greyer. There was little sunshine, and in the distance the voices of the Ents at the moot still rose and fell, sometimes loud and strong, sometimes low and sad, sometimes quickening, sometimes slow and solemn as a dirge. A second night came, and still the Ents held conclave under hurrying clouds and fitful stars. The third day broke, bleak and windy. At sunrise the Ents' voices rose to a great clamour and then died down again. As the morning wore on, the wind fell and the air grew heavy with expectancy. The hobbits could see that Bregolad was now listening intently, although to them, down in the dell of his Enthouse, the sound of the moot was faint. The afternoon came, and the sun, going west towards the mountains, sent out long yellow beams between the cracks and fissures of the clouds. Suddenly they were aware that everything was very quiet. The whole forest stood in listening silence. Of course, the Ent voices had stopped. What did that mean? Bregolad was standing up erect and tense, looking back northwards towards Derndingle. Then with a crash came a great ringing shout. Rahumra!
The trees quivered and bent as if a gust had struck them. There was another pause, and then a marching music began like solemn drums, and above the rolling beats and booms there welled voices singing high and strong.
we come with roll of drum, ta-run-da-run-da-run-da-rum.
The Ents were coming. Ever nearer and louder rose their song.
We come with horn and drum, ta-roon-a-roon-a-rum.
Bregolad picked up the hobbits and strode from his house. Before long they saw the marching line approaching. The Ents were swinging along with great strides down the slope towards them. Treebeard was at their head, and some 50 followers behind him, two abreast, keeping step with their feet and beating time with their hands upon their flanks. As they drew near, the flash and flicker of their eyes could be seen.
"Hum, hum, here we come with the boom, here we come at last!" called Treebeard when he caught sight of Bregolad and the hobbits. "Come, join the moot. We are off to Isengard!" "To Isengard!" the Ents cried in many voices. "To Isengard!" "To Isengard, though Isengard be ringed and barred with doors of stone, though Isengard be strong and hard, as cold as stone and bare as bone. We go, we go, we go to war, to hew the stone and break the door, for ball and bow are burning now, the furnace roars, we go to war. To land of gloom, with tramp of doom, with roll of drum, we come, to Isengard, with doom we come, with doom we come."
So they sang as they marched southwards. Bregolad, his eyes shining, swung into the line beside Treebeard. The old Ent now took the hobbits back, and set them on his shoulders again, and so they rode proudly at the head of the singing company with beating hearts and heads held high. Though they had expected something to happen eventually, they were amazed at the change that had come over the Ents. It seemed now as sudden as the bursting of a flood that had long been held back by a dike. "The Ents have made up their minds rather quickly, after all, didn't they?" Pippin ventured to say after some time, when for a moment the singing paused, and only the beating of hands and feet was heard.
"Quickly?" said Treebeard. Yes, indeed, quicker than I expected. Indeed, I have not seen them roused like this for many an age. We Ents do not like being roused, and we never are roused unless it is clear to us that our trees and our lives are in great danger. That has not happened in this forest since the wars of Sauron and the Men of the Sea. It is the orc work, the wanton hewing, rorum, without even the bad excuse of feeding the fires that has so angered us, and the treachery of a neighbour who should have helped us. Wizards ought to know better. They do know better. There is no curse in Elvish, Entish, or the tongues of men bad enough for such treachery. Down with Saruman!"
"Will you really break the doors of Isengard?" asked Merry.
Well, we could, you know. You do not know, perhaps, how strong we are. Maybe you have heard of trolls. They are mighty strong, but trolls are only counterfeits made by the enemy in the great darkness in mockery of Ents, as orcs were of elves. We are stronger than trolls. We are made of the bones of the earth. We can split stones like the roots of trees, only quicker, far quicker, if our minds are roused. If we are not hewn down, or destroyed by fire or blast of sorcery, we could split Isengard into splinters and crack its walls into rubble."
"But Saruman will try to stop you, won't he?"
Yes, that is so. I have not forgotten it. Indeed, I have thought long about it. But, you see, many of the Ents are younger than I am, by many lives of trees. They are all roused now, and their mind is all on one thing, breaking Isengard. But they will start thinking again before long. They will cool down a little when we take our evening drink. What a thirst we shall have! But let them march now and sing. We have a long way to go, and there is time ahead for thought. It is something to have started."
Treebeard marched on, singing with the others for a while, but after a time his voice died to a murmur and fell silent again. Pippin could see that his old brow was wrinkled and knotted. At last he looked up, and Pippin could see a sad look in his eyes, sad but not unhappy. There was a light in them, as if the green flame had sunk deeper into the dark wells of his thought.
"Of course it is likely enough, my friends," he said slowly, "likely enough that we are going to our doom, the last march of the Ents. But if we stayed at home and did nothing, doom would find us anyway, sooner or later. That thought has long been growing in our hearts, and that is why we are marching now. It was not a hasty resolve. Now at least the last march of the Ents may be worth a song." "Aye," he sighed, "we may help the other peoples before we pass away. Still, I should have liked to see the songs come true about the Entwives. I should dearly have liked to see Fimbrethel again. But there, my friends, songs like trees bear fruit only in their own time and their own way, and sometimes they are withered untimely."
The Ents went striding on at a great pace. They had descended into a long fold of the land that fell away southward. Now they began to climb up and up, on to the high western ridge. The woods fell away, and they came to scattered groups of birch, and then to bare slopes where only a few gaunt pine trees grew. The sun sank behind the dark hill back in front. Grey dusk fell. Pippin looked behind. The number of the Ents had grown, or what was happening? Where the dim, bare slopes that they had crossed should lie, he thought he saw groves of trees, but they were moving. Could it be that the trees of Fangorn were awake, and the forest was rising, marching over the hills to war? He rubbed his eyes, wondering if sleep and shadow had deceived him, but the great grey shapes moved steadily onward. There was a noise like wind in many branches. The Ents were drawing near the crest of the ridge now, and all song had ceased. Night fell, and there was silence. Nothing was to be heard save a faint quiver of the earth beneath the feet of the Ents, and a rustle, the shade of a whisper as of many drifting leaves. At last they stood upon the summit, and looked down into a dark pit, the great cleft at the end of the mountains. "Nan Coronir, the valley of Saruman."
"Night lies over Isengard," said Treebeard.
Chapter 5. The White Rider.
"My very bones are chilled,"
said Gimli, flapping his arms and stamping his feet. Day had come at last. At dawn the companions had made such breakfast as they could. Now in the growing light, they were getting ready to search the ground again for signs of the hobbits.
"And do not forget that old man," said Gimli. "I should be happier if I could see the print of a boot."
"Why would that make you happy?" said Legolas.
"Because an old man with feet that leave marks might be no more than he seemed," answered the dwarf.
"Maybe," said the elf, "but a heavy boot might leave no print here. The grass is deep and springy."
"That would not baffle a ranger," said Gimli. "A bent blade is enough for Aragorn to read. But I do not expect him to find any traces. It was an evil phantom of Saruman that we saw last night. I am sure of it, even under the light of morning. His eyes are looking out on us from Fangorn even now, maybe."
"It is likely enough," said Aragorn. "Yet I'm not sure. I'm thinking of the horses. You said last night, Gimli, that they were scared away. But I didn't think so. Did you hear them, Legolas? Did they sound to you like beasts in terror?" "No," said Legolas. "I heard them clearly. But for the darkness and our own fear, I should have guessed that they were beasts wild with some sudden gladness. They spoke as horses will when they meet a friend that they have long missed."
"So I thought," said Aragorn. "But I can't read the riddle unless they return. Come, the light is growing fast. Let us look first and guess later. We should begin here, near to our own camping ground, searching carefully all about, and working up the slope towards the forest. To find the hobbits is our errand, whatever we may think of our visitor in the night."
"If they escaped by some chance, then they must have hidden in the trees, or they would have been seen," If we find nothing between here and the eaves of the wood, then we'll make a last search upon the battlefield and among the ashes.